Scheherazade Goldsmith and Laura Bailey are the two founders of Locket, a London-based luxury jewelry label whose first product was a see-through locket, personalized with whatever charms the wearer wants. Since launching in 2013, the pair have grown the brand and they've attracted an army of loyal fans in the worlds of fashion and entertainment. They're now stocked in more than 60 retailers around the world, from Browns and Saks to Colette. So how did they become so successful? This is The Entrepreneurs. I'm Daniel Giacopelli. Today, they explain how they did it.
So my son bought me a present and I wore it a lot and played with it a lot around my neck as you do. It was quite a tactile thing. And I just started to wonder, wouldn't it be nice if you could have something that you could personalize, almost design yourself, which had a lot of meaning and had everything in it that you felt close to. And so this idea sort of came together. I discussed it very loosely over dinner with Laura, and from our discussions, it became an idea.
So was the idea originally, okay, let's make a necklace like this and just sell it? Or was it, we can make a whole company out of this?
No, I mean, originally it was just, wouldn't it be nice if, and then it turned into, actually, probably we could make a business out of this.
It certainly didn't start with a business plan or a company vision. It started with the challenge of, can we make this work? Can we make it beautiful? Is it something our friends are liking the idea of in the early drawing board stages? But things went very fast.
It's an incredibly technical piece of jewellery to make, funny enough. So the process of actually designing what we wanted and getting the samples made and, you know, getting it to look the way we wanted it to look took about a year of backwards and forwards and a lot of travel. And as I said, the technicality behind it is, well, the beauty of it is it's much more difficult than people would imagine just to look at it. But I guess that's why it's a good design.
So you guys made this great product. How do you sell it? I mean, you're now in 60, more than 60 retailers around the world. How does that happen besides sheer luck and determination and will?
So we work with a great team of people as well. And it was a product that it was an innovative idea that other jewellery companies hadn't been exploring. So when we launched it, it kind of really appealed from that front. I think the other value in Locket is its timelessness. So it doesn't fit into any one trend or any one formula. It's just something that is beautiful at all times. We've had great support from some of the best department stores and boutiques worldwide. And it's been a great privilege to work with all of them.
I think it's important to add that day one of launching, we were very focused on the website. We were very focused on being our own store online. And because things happen quite fast, we then looked into broader, more traditional retail. But our focus at the beginning was very much on creating our own world online.
Why was that important? So you could control the message? Or?
Yeah, that's the way all our design heads were working. We were very, you know, because of creating with an amazing team this new technology that allowed people to literally design online and fill the lockets and with the animation techniques of the website, that was our baby. And then everybody else came knocking. So proving ourselves was through selling online and having a product that, you know, if you grow up, I think as Scheherazade and I did, you know, trying things on, to create an online experience that gives you that magic, that bespoke feeling, that was our goal.
So how does that happen then? If you sell it through retailers, how do they customize it then if I'm at, you know, Colette or Browns
or
Saks?
Yeah, it's a big question.
So as Laura has mentioned, the idea was purely to do it on a website. Again, it was part of, you know, being contemporary, and it's the way that we saw retail moving online. The idea of having a pop-up or a shop was definitely not part of the process at all. It was never even a consideration. After we launched the website, we had amazing press support. So the retailers came knocking, which is why the wholesale idea developed, and we developed a specific 14-carat collection for them to sell. There are two collections. So online, we have many other styles that are available that are not available to the wholesalers. And with the wholesalers coming knocking, we decided that in order for them to experience that fun that we have online, we produced, the website is available on an iPad format as an app, which we customize for each of our wholesalers so that their clients can go in and experience Locket in the same way that you experience it online.
In store.
Their pieces in store.
But whilst also being able to have the tactile traditional experience as well, of course, if you went into Browns, you can, of course, try on and create and fill your locket. But there is the tech experience alongside.
Now, I mean, I don't buy much jewelry, but is it difficult buying jewelry sight unseen? Well, I guess not sight unseen, but just online. I mean, does the average jewelry buyer in 2017 buy their jewelry online or in like Liberty's, or they go to the store and they buy it in person?
So I think on a whole, people are still buying jewelry in store. Locket, again, slightly differs in that the way that we created Locket online as such a fun, realistic experience, really, that we sit slightly differently in the market in that people really enjoy the experience of playing. And they'll often play for months on end before they actually decide to purchase it, just because they keep swapping and changing their charms. We have lots of people who've said, you know, that at work they often, you know, have to quickly have like a button that they can press so that it can disappear off their screen.
Are you watching secretly in the back end as people drag things in and out and saying, oh, that looks good, that looks good?
The most horrifying thing of going into this business and doing it online has been the amount of voyeurism that happens in retail.
I know, I'm sure. What are some of the weirdest bespoke requests you guys have had for the jewelry?
Oh, gosh.
Without naming any names, I suppose.
Weird or cute? I mean, there's...
Have people said, oh, I want a, you know, a lock of hair or something, or, you know...
Well, I've always been a big, you know, from the beginning, I've always said, you know, we've got our charm collections. And for one of our original conversations, I remember we talked about, you know, a grain of sand, you know, something from, you know, you can add, obviously, your own personal treasures in the mix. That's definitely a part of it. What is the strange request, Scheherazade?
A good friend of ours bought a locket from us, and she got somebody special to blow into it, and then she closed it. And that was something
it's
really...
It's like a jar of air from Mount Everest or something like that. Like, sure, there's Mount Everest air in there.
And then the weirdest thing has been a tooth, where I've said, I'm not sure about that.
Do they know that people can see through the glass?
I don't know.
What about pop-ups? So you guys did a pop-up. You did two pop-ups.
Yep.
What was the point of that? Was that just kind of a meet-and-greet thing so people could see who you are and...
It was more to create a world of Locket so people could come in and see Locket, you know, being displayed in its own environment and its own world.
I think with the first one, with Elizabeth Street, we came across the opportunity. It fitted us. We loved the neighbourhood. It felt like the right time to create a bricks and mortar moment and learn from that. We actually had a lot of fun putting it together, the art, the shelving. I think it was actually on many levels, a brilliant exercise for us as a team. I think there's something about inviting your friends and customers to a traditional space and that's very embracing and important. And it was kind of the right point to pause and have a moment of celebration as well. You know, we also had a fun party.
Right.
Street party.
And you went through a pier here, didn't you?
Yes.
Appear here.
Exactly.
So what was your experience with them?
They're great. They're awesome. Appear here. Yeah. They're on it like within seconds. And
so you get to choose which place you want. It's like an Airbnb for retail spaces, right?
Totally. And your contract can happen within 24 hours. And the other thing about Appear here is that they make it incredibly easy and simple. And, you know, the spaces that we've picked happen to have suited us extremely well. I think the other great thing about having had a pop-up shop is it also allowed us to show our retailers how Locket can be displayed and how it works as a whole, as a big collection. And as Laura said, it was exactly the right moment. You know, we started with the development of the collection very slowly. So we started with lockets and then we added earrings and then bracelets and so on. And we'd gotten to a point where the collection had, you know, quadrupled in size. So we really wanted to put all of that on display in one place for a short period of time.
Yeah. I mean, what about a proper standalone store somewhere? Maybe in London. What are the disadvantages and advantages of that for you guys?
All shops, I think, are headaches for everybody.
Because it's kind
of like... always, just playing the fantasy game, I've always loved the idea of, you know, in LA where there's kind of juice bars that are tiny, they're like in the wall tiny, and I love the idea of developing Locket almost as a kiosk, you know, super modern, condensed. We want that to be original and true to Locket as well if we put down proper roots. We're open and looking, but we're not dependent on it.
Laura's absolutely right. It's not something we need. You know, the original idea that we were going to be online and our great wholesalers is something that works very well for Locket. And the shop, as we do the pop-up, because yes, it is a bonus, but it's something that we just need to you know, keep developing.
What about expanding the product line beyond jewelry? I mean, I know your name is Lockett and that is a piece of jewelry, but have you thought about expanding to other things beyond jewelry? Is something in the pipeline?
Well, Scheherazade's looking at me because she knows I've had this I've had this obsession with, you know.
Are you hiding something from her that you've been working on?
No, definitely not. But I am interested in taking the core concept of Lockett into other areas. I know we're talking a lot about tech and innovation, but I'm an old-fashioned letter writer. I think there's something in stationery that connects to Lockett. I love the idea of taking the symbols and charms of Lockett into, ironically, into old school communications. We're definitely interested in collaboration. We're both huge travellers. We're playing with some ideas that are inappropriate to talk about here, but I think you're right. We are named Lockett London. The Lockett is at the core of the brand, but that idea of storytelling, that idea of coding and personalizing, I think could translate well into other forms.
And you guys launched in 2013, right? So you've been around for 4-ish years.
Yeah.
You must have done tons of things wrong in that time. I mean, most entrepreneurs say they do, you know, they make big mistakes every day. Have you guys done any kind of thing that you regret at all? Have you made a product that didn't sell well? Did you make a wrong decision, the business strategy perhaps?
So I'll just say about the selling. So I remember when Laura and I were thinking about this concept right from the beginning, a very good designer, I sat next to him at dinner. I was saying, oh, I'm thinking of doing some jewellery collection. And he said to me, you know, the most important thing about fashion is, the biggest lesson I've ever learned is you need to do one thing and do it really, really well and make it unique and make it your own. He's like, sure, you'll develop the collection and bring other things out. He's like, but that one thing needs to be different to everybody else's.
Was it David Hyatt?
No.
No names.
And
he's a friend of the show, and that's his one of his mantras too. It's kind of do one thing well and just knock it out of the park.
That's actually become more and more true as we've gone on. Everything that we've done and we've developed, and Nora and I are very conscientious of this, is always to develop things which are associated back to the main core product. So never to go too far ahead, because that's not who we are. So to keep our product within a meaningful parentheses, really, so that people know that's what you come to Lockett for. But the original concept is the one that really people turn to most often.
You very skillfully and eloquently avoided the question.
I'm very impressed by that maneuver, Scheherazade. Very, very, very elegantly handled. I think the truth is, I think everything in day-to-day communications between friends, between teams, is a back and forth, two steps forward, one step back. That is the nature. Nothing is a straight line. You're learning all the time. You're having conversations all the time. You know, Scheherazade very much drives the business side as well as being creative director, but she's in charge of a big team now as well, you know. So there's so many challenges that aren't just to do with design and selling. And so that's another learning curve. You know, it was just us at my kitchen table, and now it's a lot more than that.
So overall, the entire team that works for Lockett is probably about 20 people.
But obviously things expand and contract depending on what we're working on. If we're working on a shoot, if we're working on a pop-up, it enlarges and contracts again. And we want that fluidity as well. It's exciting hiring a team for a shoot and adding to it and taking new ideas and new inspiration. It is a different level in the business, obviously.
And I suppose you have to keep the brand message out there strong with every single staff member, otherwise things could get off message and
that's Laura's department. She's very good at it.
Are you the union boss?
I don't know about that.
She's very good at driving the image and the general look and feel of Lockett as a whole, as a company, and making sure that everything stays true to the original concept and idea. I think actually going back to mistakes, I will say this. So the one thing that I have found really tricky to maneuver is social media. So really getting to grips of understanding exactly how Facebook, Instagram, all these other platforms that exist now work for a small business like us. So I understand how it works for large fashion houses that can pour and invest a lot of money, you know, several million into a Facebook campaign. But I don't think anybody's quite got to grips with how it actually works for small independent businesses, like, for example, like ours, especially for a high-end product. So again, I think it probably works quite well for people who are selling a sort of more mass market product, but it's much harder for us. And the one investment disaster we had was actually to do with social media and not seeing a return on it at all.
So in terms of sponsored ads or actually what you post on a day-to-day, or?
So just working on a Facebook campaign, just a general Facebook campaign, just that, you know, yes, it drove a lot of people to the website, but it didn't actually translate into sales.
That's interesting.
So it was fascinating. I've been to many, many Facebook conferences and to hear. So when I originally started going to these conferences and these talks, I was always came out thinking, oh, wow, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. But when you put it into practice, you begin to see that actually nobody really understands how it's working. And then the more you go back, you realize
that's Facebook's business model.
I am not really hearing a clear pattern here. And I keep seeing examples of Chanel.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. And I think people are just working it out.
I think it's a common conversation, not just between us, but amongst our peers, amongst young designers, new, relatively young businesses. It's a challenge to navigate. We're very confident in terms of what we put out there artistically in support of the brand, but another level of, you know, working the system in favor of the business is a big learning curve.
Is Instagram, and I suppose maybe Facebook, but mostly Instagram, is that a really good way to find new customers? Or is it more of a way of just reinforcing your message to existing customers?
Exactly what you've just said. So it's more of a way of reinforcing who you are as a brand at the moment. It does produce sales. But again, as I said, with a high-end product like ours, there isn't the return that you'd imagine that there would be. And actually, especially in the US market, I found that print media is still incredibly valuable, much more so than social media. So that's...
You've come to the right place to say that message, Monica.
So it's extraordinary because I know that the conversation is the opposite at the moment. But, you know, print, when I say print media, I also mean, obviously, their websites. So it's both, but it's still definitely part of the sales conversation as opposed to not so much in Europe, but certainly in the US.
I mean, if you guys were advising a new jewelry brand starting out right now with little resources, but like a really good idea, really good product, really good kind of brand message, What would you say to them? I mean, how could they find success in customers?
I think it goes back to what Scheherazade said earlier, first of all, about refining the product first. You know, without the product or the idea finessed and watertight in all senses, you know, it's all about the idea and the strength of the concept. Both of us, you know, we asked a lot of questions from people we respected and trusted who had more experience in, and that might be in online, in emeralds, in, you know, we asked a lot of questions. We had no pride in terms of how much we were learning and how much we were doing so fast.
I'd say, again, what Laura has done so brilliantly for Lockit is brand identity, which is incredibly important for anybody launching anything that might be copied. So, and we have been copied.
We try and take it as a compliment. We have very mixed feelings.
So what you've seen on social media or in print media, somebody just with your same design.
Everywhere.
From our illustrations to the way that...
No, really?
Yeah, everything to the product itself. And
overseas or here in the UK?
Everywhere.
Both.
Both. So, and I think those... So as Laura said...
To our language, to things I've written being stolen. It's something that...
Yeah, text.
We're practicing... Managing.
So what do you do then to...
Being very Buddhist about it.
Okay, fine.
Kind of.
Sue. No, you just kind of ignore. Or do you kind of just like say, well, that's a compliment somehow? Or
it is. And the people that know that
extent.
We, you know, if we have the original and the best design and people know that we're the origin of it, which a lot of people do, luckily, in a way, it can come back to us in a good way. But we try not to waste too much time worrying about it, to be really honest.
I mean, as Laura said, I think the key things to combat that is to start your business with an innovative design, so something that's new and fresh, and brand identity. Those are the two, you know, starting building blocks that you have to have very clear in your head.
And I think the other thing is inside or outside the business, have a sounding board you can trust. You know, that's our huge strength, is that we go back and forth with different strengths. And we have that, obviously, with friends and colleagues in a wider circle, but especially at the very beginning, to be able to have very speedy, frank conversations all the time with each other is hugely valuable, so that you're not in a vacuum of however magical thinking. I think both of us thrive from the endless conversation.
You know, the great thing about the partnership that Laura and I have both had is right from the initial conversation that we had ages ago, somehow we've had a very clear vision that has been identical, even though we have totally different strengths and participate in the business in different ways. Our vision has been exactly the same. So that's been, you know, very advantageous, really.
What's the ideal, like, growth trajectory for you guys? I mean, let's just say like a venture capitalist came in and like, here's, you know, £50 million to go make a global crazy business. Would you just say, no, this is more of a kind of a boutique thing and you got to keep it small, and if it's bespoke, you need human eyes on every single product? Or would you say, sure, give me the money and let's do this?
Share us out.
God, I really don't know. I haven't really thought about it.
Well, no, because you wonder, like, companies like this, I mean, you have a beautiful product and it's, again, it's like a bespoke thing. How does a product like this go really, really big?
It's a good question, because we are very protective of the authenticity of the product, the world we're creating, but we're ambitious.
It's a business, and that's why we started it out. So like any business, we want it to function like a successful business. Therefore, you know, the integral success of Lockit is its quality, its design, its, you know, its attention to the way that it's presented, the animations, the drawings and so on. So whoever would invest in it, they would know that in order to grow it, they have to keep true to those initial concepts.
I think the key line would be that we're very interested in serious growth, but without compromise.
When you're looking at the jewelry business right now, where's the innovation happening? Is it at the product level? Because you said, you know, you went around the world looking for how to actually make this kind of case that you looked. Is it that, or is it actually more kind of like how you sell things online and having, you know, what it looks like on your finger with kind of, you know, not holograms, but I don't know. Is it like the presentation or like the product?
Oh, my God. There are so many things happening. It's mind-boggling. So number one, 3D printing is going to be massive. It's going to be a huge innovation in jewelry design as how things are manufactured. There's an element of that that's very sad, because if you travel the world, jewellery is, strangely, it's still one of those things that are very much handmade all over the world. And if you go to India or China or even, you know, Thailand, all of those places is still very much using the same tools that they've been using for hundreds of years. And this is across all jewellery brands. So the 3D printing thing is going to wipe all of that out, which is incredibly sad, but it is coming.
Assuming people don't want and artisanal made thing from Morocco or Thailand, or
there's obviously still going to be that, but the vast majority of things I feel will definitely go into 3D printing. So there's that. As far as the way people buy things, China again is at the forefront of all this technology. They are, you know, producing magazines that interact with their WeChat systems, which they then just scan. And that's why the idea of shops hasn't been really at the forefront of Laura and I's decision making, just because we see things changing so quickly technologically that I don't know how long stores will be, you know, the place where people actually go to. So there are many things that are happening as far as design, as far as the way people shop, how they buy. You know, there's also, yeah, the idea of, you know, how you will be able to look at something on your finger that isn't real, that's part of a hologram.
No, because we had Charmadine Reed from Wanel. She was on the show not that long ago, and you know, there you have this incredible VR system where you could actually see what different nail art looks like on your hand or whatever. But she's, you know, it's a nail art business, but she's investing heavily in tech.
I'm interested in that. I'd fascinating, like a kind of virtual tattoo or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, are you a artisanal craft brand making jewelry? Are you a a tech brand? I mean, there's like these weird dynamics now in the tech world.
Yeah,
where
we want to be both.
Exactly.
Yeah, but tech is very, as Laura has said right from the beginning, tech has been very, very important and integral to part of the Lockit experience generally.
Still, we love photography. We love illustration. We love magazines. It's no rejection of beautiful imagery or craft. It's just that we're excited by tech simultaneously.
By innovation, really.
Yeah.
A couple of years from now, where are you guys going to be? Where do you want to be and where do you think you'll be?
I'm always trying to answer this question.
She's shaking her head. Don't,
I don't know.
On holiday.
Yes.
No, but Would you want to sell the company to a big retailer, or would you want to keep it small for a long time and kind of nurture it and make it incredibly popular? Or
it's something we're talking about.
Yeah. Never say never to anything. Yeah. Never say never.
Can you talk about it to me too? Or no, fair enough.
We're only 4 years old. Give us a chance.
Okay, fine. If you had to kind of distill some big lessons from the experience so far the past 4 years, I'm going to ask this quite frequently, but things you didn't know before you started out about just entrepreneurship. What do you guys think? If you were to add a Lockett entry to the Lessons Learned book of the entrepreneurs, what would it say?
Personally, from my perspective, I'm incredibly fortunate that my business partner is incredibly talented and knowledgeable and also a great friend. So there's a shorthand and there's no indecisiveness and just grateful for the team that's around me. So just having, you know,
teamwork and trust.
Team.
I think teamwork and trust and faith in the product. Again, faith in what you're creating and your own original language and staying on track. But sorry to sound like a self-help where you don't need it to fill in the gaps, like Scheherazade said, with social media questions, with tech expertise, with... I very much work in a kind of freelance world in all my different creative paths, and it's been really interesting and novel for me to learn to delegate and ask for help and, you know, and enlarge the team and bounce ideas around. That's crucial in this kind of product, this kind of business.
And not to sit still, you know, keep looking, keep trying to understand what's happening, just keep moving forward. I'd never come to a point where you're a bit kind of like, oh, okay, well, we'll just keep.
But also, on a more personal note, if your friends also know when to switch off, because we, you know, we have a big life together outside of our business. So I think it's also important, whether it's with a friendship or in a partnership or just work balance generally, to also know when to close the computer.
But you guys have clearly ignored the advice to never go into business with your friend.
Yeah. So,
it worked out for you, but it could have easily gone the other way.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. It's risky. Working with friends, in our case, it's strengthened and boosted our friendship and the relationships around us. But I think it's definitely a high-risk area.
Yeah. Scheherazade, do you think your son will come looking for royalties one day?
He does all the time.
she's putting him to work in
third co-founder.
Jaipur.
Yes.
Is he going to ask for kind of profits later on in the
yeah,
in the
he does all the time. He's like, how much money did the company make this year?
That goes for all five kids that we have between us, because I have to say, they've had some very good ideas in the business. They've drawn things. Scheherazade's oldest daughter came up with some fantastic marketing lines. You know, we'll take it from wherever we get.
Yeah, she was kind of mumbling them as she was playing with the first samples, and I was literally like, okay, you just saved me like $100,000.
And that's it for this week. Special thanks to Scheherazade Goldsmith and Laura Bailey from Lockett. On Friday, it's time for Eureka. The Entrepreneurs is back again next Wednesday. Today's show is edited by Kieran Banerjee. I'm Daniel Giacopelli. Thanks for tuning in.